think Tevez going to Juventus, what a coup that was for me. I mean,
on a head-to-head battle, Atletico Madrid can do more damage to Barcelona than the other way around.
Either he's really blind or he's fixing the match. I can't see it any other way.
I'm trying to get Sir Bob on my side here by saying City will win the Premier League.
It is an upset. You would expect Man United to go and win there.
Over $1 billion was paid in transfer fees between the clubs in Europe.
It's football. It's damn football. Like Ferguson said, football. Bloody marvellous.
Yeah, well, the celebration was, I can't believe I just scored against Mexico.
At one point, Parma, I think it's only like 224 players under contract.
So they're going to throw me out of here, fellas. You're going to get me arrested on your show.
If you're a serious talent, you're going back and you're playing for Santos. You know, you're going back to play for, like in Argentina, for River Plate or Boca Juniors. Or you're going to Europe.
He looked like the Ryan Giggs of old. He was more creative than any player on the pitch. He made Mata look stupid. He made Rooney look silly.
Now, the Premier League is the most exciting league out there. I think it's probably the best marketed league without a question.
When you look at the draw for the Champions League, you kind of say, well, all the pieces kind of fell into place for everybody except City.
I am your host, Joe Uccello.
Sir Bob, Mike Orr. My co-host, Rob Rojas.
My trusted co-host, Ben the Machine.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to episode 205 of Low Limit Football on this 27th of May, 2018. I am your host, Joe Uccello, and today we're going to take a quick look at the coaching carousel again, as it is moving faster than a bullet train out of control. Who has landed where and who may be out of a job next? We're going to go ahead and take a look. We're going to start to turn our focus to the World Cup as the nations begin their friendly schedule in preparation for the big tournament in Russia. And finally, we are going to look back on the penultimate event of the 2017-2018 season, the Champions League final. We're going to discuss the results, the fouls, the injuries, and much, much more with our very special guest from Shoot the Defense. Mr. Stel Stiliano is going to be joining us in just a few moments. First off, Mr. Roberto Rojas, how are you, sir? Good morning.
Good morning, Joe. It's certainly one of these very rare shows where we're doing morning episodes. I'm only always accustomed to doing these types of episodes or special shows when we're doing like pre-records or even World Cup previews.
That's right. So we're going to have to be maybe get a little different flavor of us this morning versus the normal Monday night show. But obviously tomorrow, Monday, is a holiday here in the United States, and the weather in our area looks like it's going to be reasonably nice, and I think you and I are going to enjoy a little bit of a cookout and a little relaxation, so a one-day vacation for us, right?
Definitely.
No doubt about it. So let's jump into things. I know Stel is going to be ready in just a couple of minutes, so we're going to definitely get him in here and fired up. So I know you have the trivia honors this week, my friend, so why don't you get to it?
All right, Joe. So this is a more interesting one that I feel you should know, but it's going to be a little bit tough. So Cristiano Ronaldo, despite being the only player, well, at least in the Champions League era, so that's been the debate that a lot of people have been giving, that Ronaldo will be the first player to win to win five titles or have won five titles in the Champions League era. We know that's not true, right, Joe?
Correct. You know, well, in the Champions League era, yes.
It's still the same trophy, the competition, right. Is what I'm saying.
As Ray Hudson would say, the trophy with the big ears. And I agree with you that, no, there have been a few other people that have repeated or have previously done what Cristiano Ronaldo did yesterday.
Absolutely. But he does join a list of having four Champions League titles for the same club in a span of 4 years, which obviously was Real Madrid, with 2014, 2016, 2017, and of course the big win yesterday. Can you name the other nine players from Real Madrid besides Cristiano Ronaldo to win those trophies for that same club within that time span?
I just want to understand your question. Give me a second. So this is, you're looking at current roster, I think.
Right.
You're not looking at
there have been nine. There have been 10 players, well, nine if you include Cristiano Ronaldo, mm-hmm. who won the Champions League with the same club within the last 4 years. So basically the winners from 2014, 2016, 2017, 2018, all at Real Madrid. So can you name the players who have been on that team since then?
Okay. now I got what you're saying. So it is this current. So Alfredo Di Stefano is not going to count as an answer.
Nope.
That's right. Good. Okay. So it's 9 players that I owe you. And I usually start writing them all down feverishly, but I'm going to basically hold off here for a second because I know that we need to, I need to put a few minutes thought into it. Got it. Okay. So 9 players that have won all 4 of these titles with Real Madrid, basically, is what it comes down to. So
within the last 4 years, yes.
In the last 4 years, correct. All right. So opening thoughts, Rob, is the aforementioned Champions League. Real Madrid winning somewhat convincingly in a 3-1 victory over Liverpool. The victory was marred by a couple of significant injuries in the first half. The first half play was, I would say, decent. I don't think it was, stellar, but I don't think it was terrible. It wasn't certainly the worst 45 minutes of football we've ever seen here. The second half, though, was, I guess, for lack of a better term, astonishing, especially, with the goal that was scored by Gareth Bale. The controversy, Loris Karius, who we'll talk about in a few minutes, the goalkeeper for Liverpool. Just amazing, amazing turn of events. The second half was pretty amazing. But what are your opening thoughts on yesterday's match?
Well, it was certainly a game that I think was more standout for the goalkeepers and some injuries as well. You kind of have to talk about the performances, at least in the first half, by Keylor Navas and Loris Karius. I think they both did exceptionally well to deny both the chances that both the clubs have made onto goal. However, you do look at the injuries made by Mohamed Salah in the 31st minute and then by Danny Carvajal in the 37th minute. It's been really an interesting, I would say, first half for injuries, but you kind of have to also look at what that meant going forward, because if you can remember during your commentary, during the halftime show, it was going to be important to see how Liverpool's morale was going to be affected heading into the second half, where Real Madrid, who of course had much more depth on the attack in comparison to Liverpool, which I believe have like 1 or 2 attackers after the Lallana substitution made for Salah, it was going to be interesting. You kind of had to look at the factors like a Lucas Vasquez or a Kovacic or an Asensio or even a Gareth Bale for Real Madrid. But then you came into the first goal. Benzema definitely was gifted that goal thanks to a Karius error where he just passed the ball straight to Benzema and just allowed it in. Mane definitely was able to get the equalizer. And when we were thinking that we would get a great game, hopefully a game that would definitely end to the last or even heading into extra time, in comes Gareth Bale. And in a span of literally 3 minutes after he came in, he scored that absolute golazo bicycle kick that has to go down as one of the greatest Champions League goals, maybe even in a final of all time. That definitely affected it. And then you kind of saw it. You kind of really predicted the morale was going to go down between this entire game by Liverpool. It was really, they tried their opportunities. But, again, Keylor Navas and especially the defense was just absolutely exceptional. I think I have to pick out Modric as one of those best players on the pitch. But, kind of because of the performances that he had. And, of course, Bale did finish this game with a 40-yard shot that, again, for Karius, who had a tremendously bad night overall, perhaps in the second half, I would say, just gifted away 2 goals that easily could have been stopped for Liverpool. And in the end, it really cost them. And I feel that, we have the deserved champions for a 3rd straight time. I don't think there's been any team, at least in the Champions League, that Real Madrid hasn't faced yet. Of course, I think the one team that I feel could have beaten this Real Madrid side, and we saw that definitely in the season, but we didn't get the opportunity to see it in the Champions League because of their elimination as Barcelona. I feel that, they're probably the only team out there, even better than the Manchester City, and it's definitely better than the Bayern, PSG, and a Juventus to do this. But, credit to Real Madrid for doing this. They had a successful campaign. Many doubts were definitely raised on this team heading into the Champions League because of their poor start in the La Liga season. And, credit to him, to Zinedine Zidane for really accomplishing what's certainly been a dynasty for Real Madrid that, I feel that, can't be repeated for a long, long time. But, of course, I think for Liverpool, you have to also raise your head high for a really great season. Of course, they didn't win any silverware. They didn't finish in the 3rd in the Premier League. But to go this far, and where many people did not even expect them to be in this situation a couple months ago, you have to give credit when credit's due. And, you know, it's unfortunate to see a player like Mo Salah go out with injury. We have to see how his status is for the World Cup. Reports are saying that he will be healthy, but could be missing perhaps a game or two in the World Cup. There hasn't been anything confirmed yet from the Egyptian FA or anything from him, so we're going to have to just wait and see. But overall, within the 90 minutes, Real Madrid were the better team. And, you know, there is one thing that we do have to mention, even after the game, is the status of Mr. CR7, who did win his fifth Champions League overall, but announced some incredible news, or certainly some exceptionally well PR after that game. Don't you think, Joe?
I do. You know, kind of hinting at the fact that he was on his way out of Real Madrid after this, you know. And for me, Rob, I take that kind of stuff with a grain of salt. Well, for a couple reasons. One, emotions are high after a dramatic win and you bring home a giant trophy like this. So emotions get pretty high, and people say the wrong things sometimes. But with CR7, sometimes it's a little bit more of a marketing ploy. Do you know what I mean? For lack of a better term, he's an attention whore. I mean, he truly is. How many times have we seen pictures of the Real Madrid team posing with some trophy? They're all piled up in the locker room, and there's Cristiano Ronaldo in his, you know, tidy whitey underwear only, you know, half naked, but the rest of the team is like pretty much clothed in suits. I mean, you know, this is Cristiano Ronaldo. So the spotlight is on him. He wants the spotlight on him. He wants to keep the spotlight on him. That's just how he rolls. And that's, I think part of it's where that's coming from. You know, we can look at this Cristiano Ronaldo possible move as, we can look at it from a bunch of different angles. One, look at it from the money angle. You know, who's got the money to buy Cristiano Ronaldo? Who's going to buy him? He's what, 31, right, Rob?
33.
Oh, so I mean, we're even higher. So, you know, the money it's going to take to buy him because of who he is, plus his age, just makes him not cost effective to go anywhere, you know, at the moment, in my opinion. So
I think I don't think so. I think his cost is, no, I think his network, or at least like the transfer fee that if he is going to go to is actually lower than one would imagine. I would say there's probably maybe four or five players now that are more expensive than Ronaldo just because of age as well and effectivity. Okay, I think with the exception of maybe Lionel Messi, Neymar, obviously, and maybe Coutinho because of the amount that he went to, you know, you kind of have to realize that, you know, Ronaldo is actually kind of affordable considering the fees that have been given for various players around the world. And to be honest, you know, he's 33 years old, but a good 33. That's the thing, though. Right. But you kind of have to think of him as, you know, affordable at this rate.
Yeah, I mean, affordable in Cristiano terms.
Right.
But how many teams can afford Cristiano terms is my point. And then who would do it? Again, like I said, 33 years old. How long are you getting him for? Is it worth spending 130 million euro to bring in Cristiano Ronaldo for what would amount to roughly 2 years? You know, if you think about it, because you have to really start worrying for him, especially after 35. You really have to start worrying about the wear and tear on his body. This is not a guy that's only playing 25 matches a year. I don't know his match count, but it's got to be up in the 60s somewhere. You know, when you talk about the Portuguese national team, when you talk about Champions League, when you talk about La Liga, Copa del Rey, Club World Cup, right? Because now he's going there again. So I don't know. I think that maybe it's a little more fluff, and I personally don't think we're going to see anything come of it. So I do want to ask you one question, and I know Stella's pretty much ready to come on, so I want to get to it quick. Who was the best player for you yesterday?
Gareth Bale.
Okay, that's the standard answer. I'm prepping a question with a question. So if Gareth Bale is the man of the match for you, which he was for me as well, who's your second choice? Who's the guy?
Luka Modric. Yes, okay. I think he was effective in really providing the opportunities in that midfield for Real Madrid. That I think he's the standout player. And he's kind of been always the standout player for Real Madrid. If it's not Ronaldo, if it's not Isco, if it's not Bale, or even Marcelo, I think it's Luka Modric.
Okay. See, I answered the question. I was on Canadian news last night giving an interview recapping the Champions League. And
I answered the question as Marcelo. That was actually my choice, and more so for Marcelo when Mo Salah got hurt, because it took away a lot of Marcelo's defensive responsibilities because of the change in formation for Liverpool, and it freed him up to be less defensive, more offensive, and then you saw him get much freer and be the Marcelo that we all know down the left side of the pitch. I mean, his ball in is the one that Bale put into the back of the net with the bicycle kick. So initially when I answered the question, I answered it as Marcelo. But I'm going to give you another name, and this was a name that was actually before the first whistle to kick off, was something of a little bit of controversy, and that was Isco. I thought, for me, just looking back on the match, until Isco was subbed out for Gareth Bale, I thought Isco was fantastic. I thought he was everywhere on the pitch. I mean, Rob, he was playing defensively. He was leading the attack. He was on the left side of the pitch, the right side. If you look at a map, a heat map of Isco yesterday, it was the entire pitch because he was everywhere. And I thought he did an incredible job, and probably why he needed to be subbed off is because he probably put in so many miles yesterday that he was just spent at that point. But I thought many found it to be controversial that Isco was the name chosen over Bale to start the match. And I thought for Zidane, I thought that was a great choice because Isco brings you a little bit more ball control than Bale would give you. And I thought for me, and also with Isco, you see him, like I said, everywhere on the pitch, where Bale, for the most part, stays up and down the right side. Now, he was left of the goalkeeper when on the bicycle kick because he moved into a space that was just kind of like a dead zone that that defenders left him. But, you know, I thought Marcelo, I thought Isco. I do agree with you on Luka Modric. You know, Luka Modric, I thought, had a fantastic game. I was surprised the lack of the amount of times we said Cristiano Ronaldo's name yesterday. I would have expected him to have a bigger presence than what we saw.
And he still stole the headlines, really. Game, it was all Ronaldo. Nothing about Bale. I mean, Bale, obviously, you know, he had a tremendous game, but you kind of look at Twitter, you kind of look at all of social media, it was all Ronaldo, 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 then Real Madrid, then Bale, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, well, go back to my attention whore comment. I mean, you know, here's the thing. It's, you know, Bale had the spotlight. Unfortunately, Karius had the spotlight as well, in the wrong way. Mo Salah, Sergio Ramos had the spotlight, but Cristiano Ronaldo was not that he was not effective in the game, but he wasn't Cristiano effective.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? And maybe that led to his comment. You know, maybe that led to what he said there after the match, because he wanted the spotlight. I don't know.
Yeah, it's certainly a tough situation, but now it's on to, I guess, you know, a successful season again for Real Madrid. But, you know, I guess now this definitely maintains the future of Zinedine Zidane. I think it still maintains the future of Jurgen Klopp as well, but, you know, it certainly has been a sensational season as well. But, like I said previously, the only team that I feel could beat Real Madrid in this type of competition is their El Clasico rivals.
Yeah. When we got to yesterday's match and we talked about this in the pregame, I didn't feel like either coach was going to lose their job based on the result of this match. I thought for myself that Zidane had done enough where you've gotten this team here three times, you've won it twice in a row, you know, you've done enough. I mean, now the seat would be very, very hot starting next year, of course, if he lost yesterday. But I thought that he did enough to keep his seat. Klopp, same thing. You know, aside from a ridiculous campaign from Manchester City, I thought Liverpool, on the season, for what they had and what they did quite well. And Liverpool, you know, the goalkeeping question has been there all season long, and they didn't get a chance to address it. They addressed the defensive question. They addressed it very well with Virgil van Dijk. You know, so that's, for me, that was okay. And they performed at least to the level where they were going to be. Now, I want to give you one more what if, Rob, on yesterday's game. Because, you know, because now we'll start to turn the focus to Liverpool. We'll start to turn the focus to Loris Karius and his two howlers. Obviously, for me, the first one much, much greater than the second one. Okay, the rolling of the ball off of Benzema's foot and into the net for the first goal was shocking, to say the least. You know, he was trying to play the ball quickly out of the back, but you've got to be aware of your surroundings. You've got to be aware of what's going on. And obviously, it would have been smarter for him to just hold the ball and wait till everything cleared. But he was trying to work quickly. But it was a huge, huge mistake. The second one, yes, another huge mistake. You want to give him that the ball dips and rolls and turns a little bit, fine. You can see it on one of the back angles from the goal that, yeah, the ball was kind of knuckling a little bit, but you've got to have strong hands to actually, at minimum, parry the ball away. And then if you can catch it, you catch it. So that's fine. But so two huge mistakes. But I'm gonna basically give this to you a different way. And we're going to start talking about the injuries in the first half in a moment. Liverpool is really in position to win this match if it weren't for a couple of factors. One, the Karius Howlers, right, led to two goals. And two, the Salah injury, which changed the dynamics of the game. And for me, more so the Salah injury than the Karius Howlers, because I don't think the Karius Howlers happen if Mo Salah's still in the match. And if you remember, in the first half, there was a quick threat. I mean, Liverpool was the team that was threatening in the first 5 to 10 minutes, but there was a counter where Karius was called on to make a huge save, and he did with flying colors. So Karius gets his feet under him rather quickly in this match. So for a 24-year-old goalkeeper who is in the biggest match of his life, you know, he answers the call rather quickly in this match. So I think that if Salah doesn't go down and gets injured, then Liverpool doesn't change the way they play, and I think it's a much, much, much taller hill to climb for Real Madrid because of the pressure that Liverpool bring. And we saw it in the first 10 to 15 minutes of this match. We saw it. You saw exactly how Jurgen Klopp was going to play. Jurgen Klopp was going to play like Jurgen Klopp wanted to play, and that was high press, really force them to make a mistake, force them to play out of the back and make mistakes there, and then counter on their mistakes. And they were doing that. You know, and granted, you know, Sadio Mane scores a nice goal off of the corner kick that levels the match at one. And I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, and I'd have to go back and look at the transcripts, Mane actually hits the post at 1-1, if I remember correctly.
Yes, he does.
So Liverpool were actually outperforming even though they lost Mo Salah. I think the Mo Salah injury is for me the bigger reason as to why they lost, not necessarily the Karius Howlers. Karius Howlers, yeah, they happen, but I think Madrid, once Salah goes down, I think Madrid wins anyway. Okay? And will it be 3-1 and will it be a couple of Howlers? Probably not. You know? But I think Madrid wins the match anyway at that point. Whether it's 3-1 with the Howlers that we saw, or it's 2-1, or Cristiano actually gets involved, which it seemed like they did a good job of locking him up. I think we see it anyway. I want to look at Sergio Ramos real quick. I know Stell is delayed a couple minutes, so we're going to get him on in a moment. But I want to look at Sergio Ramos, okay? Two plays really into question here. And I'll take the second play first. It is the we've seen plenty of replays on Twitter about him elbowing Karius in the head in the second half as I believe it was on a corner kick. Right, Rob? Are you familiar with the
play? Yes, I am.
That one I'm not going to put on Sergio Ramos. Okay? And I know a lot of the Twitterverse wanted to put that on Sergio Ramos's head. I'm not going to, because if you watch the play closely, there is an absolute clear and definite shove from Virgil van Dijk that knocks Sergio Ramos off balance, and the ball has already started to play out when Virgil van Dijk gives him the shove. So, for me, I'm going to pull that one away from Sergio Ramos. I'm not going to put that on his head, okay? But the Mo Salah one, I'm going to absolutely put on his head. And it's I didn't, even in the broadcast yesterday, I did not see it clearly enough because I'm trying to concentrate on working the soundboard, you know, interacting. We had some technical difficulties with Riley's connection yesterday. So I'm trying to manage all that stuff, and I'm watching the game and giving some color, and I didn't see it close enough, but I obviously since then have had the opportunity to see it plenty of times. It's dirty, Rob, for me.
Okay? It is.
He does not release Mo Salah's arm, his right arm, until after they both hit the ground. And he purposely brings down Salah. He purposely does it physically. He doesn't go in the book. I commented yesterday on the match a million times about how Sergio Ramos being able to stay out of the referee's book was a huge key to the way Sergio Ramos plays, right? Because
yes.
Sergio Ramos wants to play chippy. He wants to play physical. He's always done that. I'm not enlightening anybody here by saying this. But if he stays out of the book on that particular foul, which everyone had a clear look at, I think that is a huge, huge mistake by the officiating crew on this one.
Do you think he should have been sent off?
Yes. Yes, I do. I mean, he's intending to injure there.
Because you have to also realize, Joe, I mean, it was a chippy game, but there was only one yellow card within the entire 90 minutes. That was Mane in the 82nd minute. So you
right.
kind of – what about – do you kind of question the refereeing in this one?
You have to a little bit. You have to. You know, again, let's not talk about Mane. Let's not talk about this foul for Mo Salah on Sergio Ramos with Mo Salah. Let's talk about Virgil van Dijk giving him Sergio Ramos a huge shove in the back through the goal box, which you have a goal. You have a goal line referee on the back. How mm-hmm. does he not see that? How does he not see that play come through there? He's the one that had the absolute clearest view of it. Doesn't say nothing. Karius says something to the referee after he gets hit. So at worst, you missed Virgil van Dijk shoving Sergio Ramos in the back. You missed Sergio Ramos elbowing Karius in the head after the shove in the back. You called none of that. There's got to be a foul there somewhere, right?
Yes.
Even whether you get it right or you get it wrong, you had to blow the whistle. And so I think you do have to put a little bit. I know I'd like to go back and watch the entire game to really give a good opinion on the refereeing. But yeah, when you're looking at a chippy game like this and the only yellow card you give was a Sadio Mane yellow card in the 82nd minute, which to me, honestly, Rob, was a little bit of a soft yellow card, right?
Yes.
I think you guys missed the boat. And the Salah one, it was ridiculous. I mean, it was a complete, blatant, full takedown. And it was completely missed. And you almost feel like there was the intent to injure there. Okay? So, I've got to say that, I think it's a red card.
No, I would think so, too. At least if it wasn't going to be a red card, it had to be a yellow for sure. Nothing, but to get nothing is ridiculous.
I agree. I'm going to actually, I've just gotten a message that our guest, Stell, is ready to come on the show. So let's see if we can get him added into the conversation here. Because I can't wait. I haven't talked to him in a little while. So joining us now on Low Limit Football, great friend of the show from Shoot the Defense, Mr. Stell Stiliano. Stell, how are you, mate?
Buongiorno, Joe. Buenos dias, Roberto. See, I'm learning my Italian and my Spanish.
Are you planning,
especially
on
for you guys?
Are you planning on coaching in Italy?
Listen. If they want me to fix matches, I'll do it. Not a problem.
All right. Well, you know what? That is a great comment because Rob and I were just talking about the officiating in yesterday's Champions League match. So, looking back on it, the more I look back on it, the more issue I have with Sergio Ramos's foul on Mohamed Salah, which changed the dynamic of the game completely. So let's start there. I mean, what are your thoughts on Sergio Ramos? Was that foul a red cardable offense?
Not at all. No. Not at all. To be fair, I mean, he tussled into the ground. There wasn't anything malicious in it. There seems to be this strange notion on social media that it was premeditated and, you know, the plan was to get Salah injured. I mean, let's be honest, there's a bunch of Liverpool fans are obviously unhappy that, you know, their best player, who effectively was their talisman, the game went through him, effectively, was taken out of the game. And, okay, any other day, he may not have dislocated his shoulder. It's just the way that he fell. I don't think it was a red card offence. Possibly a booking because it was you know, he did mean to wrestle into the ground. It's kind of like an obstruction more than anything. But I think people are getting too over the top with this idea that it was reckless, it was malicious. Players have been booked for worse, you know. And I think because, okay, I know it took this thing out of the game, and a lot of people are saying that, you know, with Salah not being there, it wasn't the spectacle they expected it to be. But let's be 100% honest. How many players in the past have been targeted by opposition players? I mean, I can tell you Cristiano Ronaldo happened at United on several occasions. Ask Michael Ball, who actually stamped on him. Mm-hmm. Into Messi, Maradona. I mean, how many times has Maradona taken out? Look at the Italian 90 when Campbell tried to that way, you know, Claudio Caniggia. So it's happened. I think people are just getting too overexcited with this notion that it was intentional when he should have got sent off. I'm sorry, that's just my opinion.
Yeah, I look back on it, I felt it was a red card. Not so much, I don't believe it was intentional, like premeditated. Do you know what I mean? I don't think Sergio Ramos walked on the pitch yesterday to the Champions League anthem and said, "I'm going to hurt Mohamed Salah today." I don't think.
Well, but you hear that in boxing, don't you? I'm going to do this. I'm going to knock you out in the first round. It doesn't happen. I mean, Look, if he said that, then okay, I understand why people were getting all. But it wasn't as if it was a 2-foot tackle. It wasn't a knee breaker. No. Effectively, he just hauled him to the ground, and Salah's weight ended up on, you know, damaging his shoulder. I mean, it's happened. If it was any other player, would people be saying anything? No, because it's Sergio Ramos, and he's the best at being what we call in England the shithouse. You know, that's the kind of thing that he would do.
Yeah, no, that's true. Now, you know, let's go back and look at them. I mean, obviously we started there because Rob and I were just talking about it, but what are your thoughts on the match overall yesterday? I mean, did you think it was a fitting performance on both sides? I mean, what were your thoughts from the match?
Well, the thing is, it started how I expected it to be honest, because Liverpool are very high energy, quick tempo passing, very, very good on the ball, use their fullbacks very well, try to utilise Firmino, because Firmino for me has been a fantastic player. He's been one of their best players this season, very underrated. You know, the midfield were pressing. They did exactly what I expect them to do, but also, when Salah went off injured, exactly what happened is what I expected to happen as well. Then the players to be deflated, the fans to have their hands on their heads. As I said before, the whole scope of the game was down. It was either Salah versus Ronaldo, wasn't it? And with Salah going off, I think Liverpool, they didn't really have a plan B, did they? But in terms of the game itself, you know, when Salah went off, you know, Real Madrid took control of things as expected when something like this happens. And they're very streetwise, Real Madrid. You know, a team that's been in, what, five finals in recent years? I don't know, four out of five. Exactly. You know, you don't get into those finals. But they're pretty much the same core players. You don't get into four finals, you know, in 5 years if you're mugs. You know, it doesn't happen. So, you know, it was a performance like that. To be honest, what surprised me more was the manner in two of the goals that came from. The first one was obviously an absolute clanger. I mean, I've seen it happen before, but not in a game that big. And the Bale's second goal was a calamity as well. But speaking of Bale's second goal, it looked like Harris wanted to punch the ball, and he changed his mind literally at the last second. And it's like when the player goes to take a penalty and then they change their mind. 9 times out of 10, they're going to miss. And I think that's the reason why he dropped it. You know, so and the second goal, Bale's first goal was, you ain't going to stop that. But, yeah.
No, absolutely. And, you know, still, I mean, you know, a lot of people really want to put the blame on Karius for having a really poor night, which he did, of course, conceding those two easily stoppable goals with Benzema and, of course, Bale's second goal. But, you know, you kind of have to do better on this, and you can't really always, you know, feel sorry for him. Okay, yes, of course, there is the old cliche of feeling, goalkeepers are human, you know, they make mistakes. But, you know, you kind of have to do better from a realistic standpoint on those two goals, don't you think?
Mate, let me be 100% honest with you with this one, right? Those two goals that he conceded, it shouldn't have happened. Top class goalkeepers, you know, these are mistakes that you expect at Sunday league level, you know, you know, not even semi-pro. I've seen it happen in park football. You know, I'd go in goal and I might drop the odd goal kind of thing, but that's unforgivable. And, you know, I think, look, as a Man United fan, I found it absolutely hilarious. But I'm trying to see this as a neutral, and, you know, I've got a question: Liverpool's mentality in this one, because okay, Salah went off injured and their heads dropped. They went a goal down and they fought back to gain equaliser. And you're thinking, right, game on. The moment Bale scored that goal, that overhead kick, it completely knocked any momentum, any wind they had in their sails. And that's got come down to mentality, right? Forget the goalkeeper dropping the third goal, the one that went in right through his hands. Forget that one for a moment. When Bale scored that second goal, I know it's like a sucker punch, and I know it's difficult to get your mind back into it. But where are the leaders in this Liverpool team? With the greatest respect, he isn't a Vieira. He isn't a Keane. He isn't a Gattuso. He isn't that kind. He isn't a Sergio Ramos. When you've got a team full of leaders, which Real Madrid do, that's half the battle won. And I think I said this on the last show when I came on. You know, the great United teams, the great Arsenal teams, even to Chelsea to some extent, they won the game tunnel before because the opponents would look at them and say, right, I'm having to go against Schmeichel, I'm having to go against Kassar, against Giggs. And it's a psychological. Firstly, I think Liverpool don't have that mentality, the winning mentality. And it's shown. Two finals in a row, they bottled it. You know, so I think it stems more. Forget the goalkeeper. Okay, fair enough. He made mistakes that he should have done a lot better with. He shouldn't have made those mistakes in the first place. But again, when you go a goal behind and you get that equaliser, you should go on to get a stranglehold in the game. And they didn't. And effectively, Salah going off was the killer for them.
Yeah, no, of course. And I think I mentioned that to Joe as well when he was doing his commentary that, you know, I think the Salah injury really affected the morale and it was going to be questioned heading into the second half how well they were going to respond for that. And of course, you know, I think it proved badly, you know, and you're right. There isn't any leader. You know, you would expect Henderson to be that kind of leader, but you didn't see that. And where Real Madrid, of course, they did have the advantage not only in depth as well, where they could bring in attacking players like, you know, obviously Bale ended up doing, or Asensio or Kovacic or any of those players, you know, but they have leaders. If it's not Sergio Ramos, it's Cristiano Ronaldo. If it's not him, it's Luka Modric, it's Benzema, it's those type of players. Exactly. So that's why they had that advantage.
The thing is, Robbie, like, to be fair, Liverpool, defensively, they were sound, weren't they? I mean, yes. Lovren didn't have a mistake in him. Van Dijk was superb as ever. Even the fullback. So, you know, Robertson, the left back, had a storming game. So I can't say that defensively Liverpool were ropey. They held their own. They nullified Ronaldo. Benzema didn't really have anything to do apart from, you know, run away to celebrate that freak goal. So from a defensive standpoint, they were fine. They were brilliant. But again, it goes down to mentality. And you know, I expected more from Liverpool, even without Salah on the pitch. Because let's be honest, Firmino's been brilliant. Mane's been fantastic this season. Wijnaldum has come of age recently. Fantastic in the middle of the park since Oxlade-Chamberlain has been injured. So, I expected more from Liverpool.
Definitely. No, definitely. And considering what they've been able to give us this season, you kind of did want to expect more from them. And especially from Jurgen Klopp, who now, you know, heading into next season, certainly a lot of questions are going to be asked. Okay, obviously, it was a sensational season beyond any expectation to go to the Champions League final and, you know, and have great performances from Salah. But, you know, you kind of have to put him in the hot seat heading into next season where, you know, a string of bad performances, maybe in the Champions League or maybe a bad start in the Premier League, might see him leave a bit earlier than one would expect.
I can't see that happening. And the main reason is, A, the fans absolutely adore him, and B, the owner loves him to bits. So it will take a lot for Jurgen Klopp to lose his job. I think he can probably get away with another at least two seasons without winning anything. Mm. I really think he can. Because, as I said, if they continue getting top four, it doesn't matter because, effectively, the Champions League is a be-all and end-all for a lot of teams, you know. And Liverpool, yeah, they're being tipped to challenge City for the league title. But, again, it goes back to what I said about mentality. City have got that winning mentality. They've got champions all over the pitch. So I don't know about Liverpool running City close next season. It might happen, it might not. But, again, I think because how adored Jurgen Klopp is by the fans. I mean, you saw him. I don't know if you've seen that video of him singing with Liverpool fans at 6 in the morning in a hotel. You know, he's bonkers, but that's what they love. He loves the club, you know, everything about Liverpool. The fans respect him and they've got a lot of time for him. And it will take a lot for Liverpool fans to turn on Jurgen Klopp. It really will.
Definitely. Now, heading into Real Madrid, I mean, obviously, this is a sensational feat for a manager like Zinedine Zidane and Real Madrid as well. You know, three straight Champions League titles in a row. And many people were starting to raise doubts on this team earlier in the season because of their bad campaign in the league and where Barcelona were just so far ahead of them. that, you know, many people need to also remember that this was a team that did poorly in La Liga, but certainly took out all the haters and won the Champions League for a third straight time. I mean, you know, Stel, is there any team that can beat Real Madrid, at least in this Champions League? Because, you know, we've seen teams like Bayern, Juventus, and PSG try to battle it out and fail. But, you know, the only team that I can think of that can really beat them, and unfortunately we didn't see that because of their early elimination, is Barcelona. I mean, what do you think?
I was at the Champions League final last season between Juventus and Real Madrid, and I said to a friend of mine after the game, that is the most complete performance I've seen in a European final. I know Milan trounced Barcelona 4-0 back in 94, I think it was, and that was convincing. But that final, it was just... I mean, Mandzukic got that fantastic goal, but Juventus had nothing. They had absolutely nothing. And I was saying to my mate, this is the best European team I've seen in my lifetime. You know, and that's including that Barcelona team that won a couple of Champions Leagues in, you know, 2 and 3 years or whatever it was under Guardiola. But
yep,
the only thing I questioned Real Madrid at the beginning of the season was the hunger. Were these players hungry enough? Because they've done it all. A lot of these players have done it all. World Cups, European Championships, Champions Leagues, La Ligas, you name it, they've done it. So there's the hunger there. But here you've got Zinedine Zidane that's trusted in a lot of younger players like Asensio, Nacho and a few others. And they just, you know, when it comes to the Champions League, mate, you know, it's like spinach to them and they're Popeye. They will just destroy everyone by hook or by crook. And that's what makes them a phenomenal team. Next season might be a different story. It might be. You never know. I really can't see them doing 4 in a row. I really can't. But at the same time, you know, this time next year, we might be talking about them winning the Champions League at Atletico's ground. It's crazy. So, yeah, I mean, it's been a fantastic season. It's been a fantastic 3 seasons for them. Well, so I can't knock them at all.
I wanted to jump in here because, you know, you bring up an interesting thought. You know, one of the big moves they made a few years ago was Gareth Bale coming into the league and coming onto Real Madrid. There's a lot of talk now that he's going to be leaving now, that he's not getting first team minutes. He's not getting enough first team minutes for his liking. So he's probably going to be on his way out. You know, so what does Real Madrid do to replace him? I mean, are we... Because Real Madrid is not going to just lose a Gareth Bale and not do something about it. They're, you know, they have buckets full of money, and they can go buy whoever they want. They can reload whoever they want. So what do you think they do if Gareth Bale leaves, and where does Gareth Bale go?
Well, I'll be honest, mate. I don't think he's going to leave. I think what he said last night after the game is just, you know, his way of giving the president a nudge and say, right, you know, I want a new deal. Because those 2 goals that he scored last night is basically, you know, it's a bargaining tool now. Mm-hmm. He's in pole position. He can go wherever he wants. Let's be fair. Any team in the world would have him. Even Barcelona, mm-hmm. You know, who wouldn't? Let's be honest. So, I think it's a bargaining tool. I doubt he wants to leave. I haven't heard any stories about his family being unsettled in Spain. I haven't heard anything about him being unsettled. And in the English press are ruthless when it comes to players abroad, you know, especially British players. So, you know, I haven't heard anything negative. I haven't heard anything bad about his time there. So I think it's more like a bargaining tool for him to stay. And let's be honest, Ronaldo's another year older. He's still banging in the goals. Mm-hmm. But Bale is, I think he's very comfortable at Real Madrid, mate. If he were to leave, where would he go? I think the Premier League is the only place that he would go because he's obviously British, Welsh, should I say. So, I don't know. It's tough to say which team would want him. Maybe Spurs. I think that's one of the few clubs that could afford him, to be fair.
Yeah, I mean, certainly, I think any club of any club in the Premier League would definitely love to have Gareth Bale on their team. So, yeah, we're just going to have to wait and see. It's been in some interesting comments given from both the men, actually, from Ronaldo and from Bale. So it's going to be interesting. Now, shifting gears to the World Cup, obviously, we're a couple of days away from it. I mean, squads have been announced. But the one squad that kind of has raised a bit of eyebrows, and Stel, you talked about this a bit, considering when their team was announced, was Argentina. I mean, you kind of saw, of course, a team that obviously has been suffering for the last few months because of the way that they qualified, because of the quality that they have on this team. But you kind of also have to realize that there isn't a lot of players on that team that can carry them to a World Cup. You know, there was no Mauro Icardi on this team, and certainly a lack of defense and perhaps a mediocre type of midfield as well. But I just want your thoughts on that squad. And, you know, are they good enough to even challenge for a semifinal in a World Cup?
There's too much infighting for Argentina to be considered as potential world champions. You know, for me, Leaving out Mario Icardi is an absolute disgrace. You know, the guy got, what, 30 goals in Serie A this season?
Yep.
He scored more than Higuain. He scored more than Aguero. And why isn't he in that team? What, because Messi is mates with Maxi Lopez? That is the only reason, you know. And, it, you know, as great as a player Messi is, he, for him to be going on about like that, it's shocking. It's actually shambolic. You know, this guy is supposed to be the national team's captain. He's supposed to lead by example. What kind of example is he setting, you know, to ensure that this guy, forget, you know, Icardi's personal life, whatever, what he can bring is goals, and goals win games. We saw how Argentina struggled in the qualifiers. I mean, I came on your show and we were saying, you know, yeah, Messi has to have the game of his life against Ecuador, and he did.
Mm-hmm.
But he needs to deliver in this World Cup, and you're not going to deliver if you don't have your best players. Higuain bottled a World Cup final. In fact, he bottles every final. So how can you trust him in another final if they get there? Aguero, injuries here and there, he'll get you goals. I love Aguero. In fact, I told you he's one of my top five in the world strikers. But you can't just rely on one striker. You need to have that backup. And, you know, as good as Dybala is, why have they picked so many midfielders? I can't understand. It's just, it baffles me. So, no, on that basis, I can't see Argentina winning the World Cup, especially if, you know, they revert to a back four. That, you know, I know the manager is more like a 3-1-3-3 kind of guy. And if you see a back four, then you know it's Messi picking the team. So, I don't know. It doesn't sit very well with me, to be fair.
In fact, Sampaoli, I think, put up a diagram of how he's going to play a 2-3-3-2, I think, is what I saw.
Which, that hasn't been seen since, what, the 40s, the 50s?
So, Jesus. Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, I'm looking at this diagram, I'm like, how the hell does this work? You know, who plays where in a 2-3-3-2? I don't get it. I don't know what he's trying to do. He's trying to get more midfielders or strikers on the pitch. But he's got to have, you know, midfielders that can defend well, because you're going to leave the flanks open.
He's probably going to have it'll be two central defenders, yep, two fullbacks, one holding midfielder like a Mascherano. I don't even know if he's in the squad.
He is.
So Mascherano will be tidying up. You'll probably have three central midfielders, one in the point of attack. So I don't know. I mean, he knows better than I do. Yeah. I haven't won a Copa America twice, or not even once, not even a football manager. Well, he knows more than I do. But, you know, again, I just think that Messi is a very he's a big game player. He's a superb footballer, but as a person, to have internally, I don't think he's a great example.
It could be what does him in terms of adding that final title to the international trophy that his legacy really craves at this point now. So go ahead. No, Stel, go ahead.
No. I was going to say, when you see Argentinian fans, you know, decapitating Messi's statue, it tells you a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It does. They want the trophy more than they want him at this point, I think.
Exactly.
It's all about the comparisons about with Maradona as well.
Sure. I mean,
there's no comparison in my opinion, but that's another debate.
I want to close out. I want to get your thoughts on the big managerial move that was made this week with Unai Emery being signed on as the new head manager at Arsenal. Really, it's interesting, Stel, because they didn't name him as the manager. They named him as the head coach, which leads you to believe that, you know, to coin the American football, Bill Parcells, if they're going to let you cook the dinner, they should let you buy the groceries. It sounds to me like
I've never heard that before.
Yeah, but it sounds like Emery is not going to be in charge of buying the groceries. It sounds like he's going to be cooking whatever dinner the Arsenal brass buy him. So, what are your thoughts on Emery coming in as a head coach and not a manager?
Well, he's not David Moyes for a start, so I think Arsenal have got one over United in that sense. the thing is, it's a massive, massive job. I said it the other day on our show that it's probably the biggest job in English football at the moment, and not because Arsenal are just a big club, but because there's so much needs to be changed in the background. There are a lot of players there that shouldn't be at the club. They don't look. Arsenal are a prestigious club. Arsenal have got history. You know, when I see players like Hector Bellerin, when I see players like Danny Welbeck, when I see players like, to some extent, Granit Xhaka, Mustafi, these aren't players that are going to win you league titles or challenge for major honours. And Emery will have to stamp his authority. I don't know what he's like in terms of the whole social media hype, if he likes players to do that. I know that obviously sponsors and manufacturers want the players to do that to boost their profile, and agents especially want them to do that because it adds an extra nought to the player's value. I get it. But, you know, it just seems that a lot of players are more focused on their off-the-field activity than on the field. And it's shown this season. I think, again, I think it's a massive job that he needs to do. He needs to get rid of a lot of deadwood. He needs to bring in quite a few experienced players. I hear Lichtsteiner is another player that could be coming in, and that'd be a fantastic signing for them. I know him at 34 years old. Has got bags of experience. Still got the energy, still got the legs, as we saw against Real Madrid in the semi-final. Mm-hmm. So the rebuilding has to begin, but it's down to the fans now. A lot of the fans wanted Wenger out. They call them the Wenger out boys, the WOBs. And they need to be patient with this guy. I've seen a lot of, you know, there's a lot of social media brouhaha about Arsenal at the moment, and their fans are saying, oh, he plays football in this way. And, you know, in his interview, he gave an extensive, you know, player-by-player analysis, which, let's be honest, a lot of managers do that anyway when it comes to interviews. They tell the board what they want to hear, so to speak, so whatever. But they need to give him time. They can't get on his back. Unfortunately, Arsenal fans, I say a lot of modern day football fans in general, expect players and managers to hit the ground running. Mm-hmm. If they don't, then they're in for a torrid time. I see a lot of fans on social media saying, right, you know, we need to give him a chance. I hope they do give him a chance, because it ain't an overnight fix. This team has been regressing for at least 5 years. And I'm very surprised that, you know, that Wenger has managed to keep him up there. Like I said, it's a massive job. He needs time. He needs the opportunity, and he needs to spend money, because they need wholesale changes, in my opinion.
But are they going to let him spend the money that they need?
That's a good question. They can point to the facts and say, well, look, we spent 50 million on Lacazette. We spent 50 million on Aubameyang. You know, we brought in Mkhitaryan on big wages. We signed Ozil to $300,000 a week, and so on and so forth. But the main issues haven't been addressed. Defensively, they're still poor. In midfield, they're balsa wood. And again, they've gone to cojones, as Troy Deeney said. They really don't have the balls for a challenge. And once they get that nipped in the bud, then we can talk about them being a top four side again. We can talk about them challenging for the title. But at the moment, they're falling further and further behind the rest. You know, Liverpool got to the Champions League final. They're going to invest. I mean, they brought in Naby Keita already. United are sure as hell going to invest. City again. That's three teams. Chelsea are going to bring in a new manager, new ideas. Tottenham are going to be moving back to White Hart Lane. They're going to spend money. As Pochettino said, we need to spend money. So, again, that's five teams that Arsenal needs to contend with for four places. So, it'll be tough. I hope they give him time. But knowing the way social media is, two bad results, and it's already, oh, hang about, this isn't the right appointment. We should have got Allegri, who had no interest in joining the Arsenal. So
now let me ask you this, because you bring up the last managerial question I wanted to ask you, and that's obviously Conte at Chelsea. Rumor is he's out. As far as I know, there's been no official announcement yet as to Conte being out. This is a man that in 2 years returned the FA Cup title just a couple weekends ago, and last year won the EPL title. I mean, two trophies in 2 years, but Rob and I have said a million times, what have you done for me lately? And I think people are soured on the fact that they finished, I want to say, fifth in the league. The rumor is that they're going to trade an Italian for an Italian and bring in Maurizio Sarri from Napoli, who's out of a job after Napoli signed Carlo Ancelotti earlier in the week. So Do you think the Sarri signing is a good fitting, especially given the way Sarri plays, where he's very offensive minded, but at the same time he's very rigid, and he's not one that's apt to change his style or even his players much. So, do you think Conte is definitely out, and do you think Sarri is the right fit to come in and take him to the next step?
Do I think Conte is out? Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate, because as you said, he won the league title, he won the FA Cup. Getting rid of him is shocking. Mm-hmm. But see, the reason why they're getting rid of him is not because he's a bad manager. It's because a lot of the players don't have faith in him. And that, again, it's a Chelsea thing. You see it time and time again. Head coaches come in, they win the league, And then either a year later or 2 years later, the players just decide to down tools. It's happened so often.
Mourinho 4 years ago. Same thing.
Ancelotti?
Yeah, Ancelotti.
Happened with Ancelotti as well?
Oh, yeah.
So it's this pattern that seems to be emerging with Chelsea and that the players keep getting away with it. But to answer your question about Sarri, look, a lot of people are going to get on my back about this one. I don't get the hype. And this is how I'm going to explain it. You're getting rid of a manager that's won you a league title and an FA Cup in two seasons, and you're replacing him with a guy that hasn't won anything ever.
Right.
Ever. You know, ever. You know, come on. It doesn't make sense. And on what basis are they employing him? Because he got, 80-odd points, 90-odd points for Napoli? Because, you know, the European campaign wasn't great, was it? I don't remember them getting far in the Champions League. Didn't they get knocked out of the group stage and then the Europa League and then got knocked out?
They got knocked out there.
And they got right. Immediately.
Right. So, you know, getting rid of Conte baffles me. I can see why they're bringing in Sarri because he's flavour of the month. You know, he plays beautiful football. You know, Napoli have got this, there's this romanticism about Napoli. You know, Hamsik is the god there and Mertens has been scoring goals. They're the hipster's favourite. Koulibaly's been fantastic. I get it. But what Conte has done with Chelsea has been nothing short of a miracle. He took a very deflated side with lack of confidence. He guided them to the title. I don't care what people say about them not having any European football. It's a 38-game season, right? It's a 38-game season. Teams have won doubles before. Teams have won European Cups and league titles before. So this whole, the European Cup, them not being in there, you know, has been an advantage is nonsense. It's absolute nonsense, right? He brought in a couple of players, brought in Kante, brought in Alonso. He changed his system. I respect him. I've got so much time for him. I know he's a bit of a passion merchant sometimes, but you don't come to the Premier League, win the title, and then win an FA Cup if you're a mug. And, you know, I think them getting rid of him is an absolute disgrace. And those Chelsea players really need to hang their heads in shame, especially Eden Hazard, who's been one of the most inconsistent players I've seen in the Premier League. As fantastic as he is on the ball, as great as he is as a player on the pitch, you know, he can change a game at the drop of a hat. He doesn't do it enough, really doesn't. And he's let manager down. The players have let the manager down. And I just think it's bang out of order what they're doing to him.
My God, I think you've been listening to this show.
I try.
I mean, this is like everything I've said. I've even said, you know, publicly, which Eden Hazard are you getting? Are you getting the Eden Hazard that wants to play? Because that guy can win you a match on any given day. You know, if Eden Hazard plays his top match, his top 90 minutes, he's probably one of the 10 best players in the world, hands down. But you also get the Eden Hazard where you can see it, where he mails it in. You know, he's not coming out today. And he looks terrible. And the team reflects that. And then the performances reflect that. I saw it more under Mourinho than I saw it under Conte. But I did see it under Conte. And I think it's awful that these multimillionaires can do that, you know, because in the end,
Joe, look what they did to him at the beginning of the season, to Conte. They let Matic go, and he even said, I didn't want him to leave.
Right.
They sold him under his nose, right? I know Matic wanted to leave. Obviously, Mourinho must have had a word with him in the summer to get him, but they were happy to let him go. I don't think a lot of these players that have been brought in are his players. Is Danny Drinkwater a Conte player? Is Ross Barkley? I don't even think Giroud is his player. David Luiz at the beginning of last season. I can probably think of a handful of players that are actually Conte players.
No, I would say,
you know, I don't think it's fair what they're doing to him. I really don't. But you know what? It seems to be working every season because they seem to win something. They brought in Benitez, he won the Europa League. They brought in Di Matteo, he won the Champions League. It's bizarre how they've managed to do it. But I'm just going to deviate a little bit. Mm-hmm. I think Chelsea have suffered since Emenalo's gone because Emenalo has been a massive influence in the background. Massive influence. And I think he was kind of the glue that held the squad together, if I'm being honest.
I agree 100%. Yeah, and it amazes me, like you said, Benitez wins the European Cup, the Europa, and they get rid of him. Di Matteo, it was almost they fired him before he even left the stadium after the Champions League. It boggles the mind. But I guess, you know, they keep winning trophies, so it's hard to argue against it. But it just, they go about it for me the wrong way. Eventually, I think they're going to burn enough bridges at Stamford Bridge, where they won't be able to bring in a big name like that anymore. So, and maybe
the good thing about bringing in Sarri is that he promotes youth, and Chelsea got a very, very good youth system, a mm-hmm. fantastic youth academy, and we've seen players like Shalaba move on. Solanke's gone to Liverpool. Okay, he hasn't pulled that many trees, but he'll come good. We've seen them, win the youth cup on numerous occasions. Jody Morris has done fantastic in the background. So, they've got that core players, but then they've got that whole money ball mentality whereby they loan players out, and then they sell them on for ridiculous fees, like that Gilly Bodgy that they sold to was it Werder Bremen? It was Werder Bremen, wasn't it? And these other players gone to Vitesse and whatnot. So they're fantastic at doing that, but at what cost? At what cost? I don't know.
Crazy. Well, mate, I want to thank you for taking the time out today and joining us. And it was great that we got to catch up with you. What do you have going on at Shoot the Defense this week?
We'll probably be reviewing the Champions League final. We'll probably be talking about the playoffs because Fulham are now back in the Premier League. They beat Aston Villa, another former Premier League team, a team that's won the European Cup more than Arsenal, mind. Let's get on in. Steve Bruce has done a brilliant job getting them there. Jokanović has been fantastic at Fulham, former Watford manager as well. Those are two of the many subjects that we'll have. I've been doing some e-gaming reviews recently for a company called Sport Ego. I went to FC Twente's ground in Eschende the other day, and we streamed on Twitch and got about 70,000 views. It was an e-gaming tournament, which was absolutely fantastic. Wow. So there's a lot happening. Thank you for inviting me on. I listen to your show. It's absolutely fantastic. You lot have had great guests. You lot know your stuff, and it's refreshing to hear.
No, we appreciate that. Last question. Who wins the World Cup?
I'm outside and I see so many fences I feel like sitting on, but I'll get splinters on my backside. who wins the World Cup? I'm gonna go Brazil. Mm-hmm. I think Tata's got a fantastic squad there. It's a fantastic squad. They got a European style of play. I think Firmino will come good, but Gabriel Jesus is there, Coutinho, Neymar might be fit, Willian, Fred. Defensively, they're much better as well. I'm gonna go for Brazil.
All right,
Brazil or Spain, just for Ramos and what he did in the Champions League. So.
He'll take down somebody else in the World Cup. So.
All right, win at all costs, mate.
That's right. So, all right, man. We'll talk to you soon. Cheers.
Thank you, guys. Have a good one. Take care.
Bye.
Thank you.
All the best.
Stel Stiliano from Shoot the Defense, man. Always great to catch up with him. He is awesome. So, Rob, I know we've got a couple of topics here we want to talk about. Let's jump into them quick. Obviously, we hinted at the Unai Emery one at Arsenal. I thought, and I'm glad I got to bring it up with Stel. Interesting that they named him the head coach and not the manager. And let me ask you this, Rob. Do you think he's going to stand a chance?
I mean, it all has to come down to like what Stel said. And unfortunately, in this type of modern football soccer, the way of cutthroat culture. Mm-hmm. It's going to be hard. I mean, they're going to have to go on all cylinders and really need to be on a great performance. That if they're not, assuming that City are going to contend again for the title, I mean, if they're not touching distance from them and not doing well in the Europa League, that, yes, heads are going to probably roll very quickly. But I feel that with a manager that has already know the experience of winning silverware, managing superstars, as he did at PSG, that I think he'll be able to really get what he needs to bring, and perhaps not in the method that is so customary nowadays in modern managers, but I feel that he can be able to really provide. And like Stel said, the fans need to give him a chance. Something that they haven't been able to do in a long, long time. So you kind of have to really see what happens with Emery. But I feel that maybe he can be able to really do a good job on this team.
Yeah, for me, it almost feels like they're setting him up to fail a little bit, where they're kind of, they're going to give him the team they want to give him, whether they spend the money or not. They're going to give him the team they want to give him. And if he does well with it, great. But I don't know if maybe they won't lower their expectations. They may even raise them. So because they're going to look at his pedigree and say, well, you've won three Europa Leagues. I mean, Why can't you? You won the title in Ligue 1 with PSG. Why can't you win here? You know, why can't you win with this team? You should be able to win everywhere, right? And I almost feel like they're setting them up to fail. Again, it's not quite the David Moyes situation that Stell alluded to, but it's still similar in the fact that you're replacing the giant. You're replacing the longtime girlfriend in Arsene Wenger, just like Moyes replaced the longtime girlfriend in Sir Alex Ferguson. You don't want to be that guy. You want to be the guy that replaced you want to replace the girlfriend that replaced the girlfriend. You want to be the second step. And so I think Unai Emery right now is going to be that sacrificial lamb. He lasts the year. I think he lasts the year at Arsenal. Depending on what he does, if he at least manages status quo and gets them into some type of European competition, I think they'll be happy with that. But I think that you know, his seat will get hotter and hotter as the matches wear on and on, I think.
Definitely.
And, you know, so we'll have to see what happens there. Let's you know, the other thing we talked about, let's start from the Italian end. Obviously, Napoli gets rid of Maurizio Sarri after a 91-point season at Napoli. And Stell also mentioned that he didn't win anything. He hasn't won any trophies, but still, at the same time, he's known as a wonderful talent, a good coach. He's always had that stigma where he only plays X amount of players. We've seen the additional talent come in at Napoli, but not really make the pitch. You know, I think one of the things that Napoli has suffered from is the fact that Arduriš Milić has suffered injuries the past couple of years. But Sarri now, they've moved on from Sarri. Sarri has not moved on from Napoli. Napoli has moved on from Sarri. Let's make sure we get that one straight. But they brought in Carlo Ancelotti. Carlo Ancelotti's won trophies everywhere. I mean, he's won pretty much every trophy you can put out there. So I think Napoli feels that this Ancelotti move is the next step to knocking off Juventus. I'm going to throw it to you, Rob. Is Ancelotti the key piece, or do you think they need something else?
I mean, you can't get any better managers than Ancelotti out there in world football that I feel that, yeah, I think he is. But it's going to be tough for them to really try to maintain all their star players like Mertens, like, you know, Jorginho as well, who's been rumored to leave. You know, it's going to be tough for them. But I think with Ancelotti being such an emblematic character and really a wonderful manager, you know, I feel that, yeah, it's going to be an interesting case. But I just don't see them challenging or at least, well, not challenging, but them, you know, dethroning Juventus into another Serie A campaign. It's going to be really, really tough. Now, of course, it all depends on the future of Allegri and how he handles, you know, depending on where he's going to be heading or what his future is going to be. But I just don't see them challenge or at least dethroning Juventus into this campaign next year.
Yeah. This is, you know, looking at it from that standpoint, this is probably the key season for any team to dethrone Juventus. It's next season because there's questions. Obviously, Buffon is gone. Lichtsteiner is going to be gone. Kvaratskhelia is going to be gone. There are questions. Marchisio might be gone. There's a lot of core, you know, players and really, you know, character players that are going to be moving on. Chiellini's a year older. Barzagli's a year older. He might be moving on as well and just retiring. Allegri, there's questions about him coaching. So there are a lot of questions. And I think if you're going to pick off Juventus, next year is the year, period, end of story. Because if Juve can survive all of this, reload what they need to reload. Apparently, the medical is scheduled tomorrow for Emre Can to come in at Juventus. So that sounds like it's a completely done deal. It's probably the worst kept secret in the history of football. But if Juve reloads and they reload quickly and they manage to either A, stick with Allegri and get the pieces he wants, or B, get rid of Allegri quickly, bring in somebody that is going to take this team to the next level, maybe even bring Conte back, then Napoli's in trouble and really the Serie A's in trouble, because you could see them, as long as they hang on to Dybala and things get mended there with Allegri and Dybala, you could see this team really start to carry on for years. And I'm talking adding another 4 or 5 trophies in a row in addition to this one. But the key is now. This is, for me, this is the pivot point for Juve. How do they handle the loss of a legend? How do they handle the loss of key character players on the team? And that's going to be up to Ancelotti to find a way to do it now. And that's a huge challenge for him, because usually coaches, like, you know, Rob, they want a year. They, you know, you need a year. You need to bring in some pieces, work on them, work them out, get them playing the way you want them to play, And then usually in the second year is usually something. It's not often that managers do it right away in the first year, okay, unless they're given the keys to a Ferrari, right? So so I think, you know, in Ancelotti's case, in Napoli's case, and in the Serie A's case, this is going to be the year to knock Juve off the perch. Sarri to Chelsea. So let's take it further now, because with Sarri leaving Napoli, the rumor is that he's going to be going to Chelsea. I don't like the move. I don't think Stell is really happy with the move, because how do you get rid of a guy that's won two trophies in 2 years in a difficult league, Rob? This is not some pushover league, right? I mean, this is the Premier League. This is one of the you know, top five leagues in the world, top three leagues in the world, possibly. So,
definitely.
So to move on from a guy who has won you titles, it just boggles the mind. But that's the Chelsea MO lately. And like Stell brought up, they did it with Di Matteo, they did it with Rafa, they did it with Ancelotti, they did it with Mourinho. These are not small names, Rob. These are huge, huge names in the coaching circles. And they continue to do it. So, you know, from the Saudi standpoint, why would I want to go to Chelsea? It's only a 2-year job, and then they're probably going to get rid of me, and they're going to move on to somebody else. So, you know, what are your thoughts on Saudi to Chelsea?
Yeah, it's certainly definitely a curveball that I wouldn't expect. Because you look at a lot of different factors, the way that his attitude is to the players. You kind of also want to factor the language barrier as well. Of course, you know. I think Sarri is able to withstand the ruthless aggression of, you know, the English media or the fans as well because of his attitude. I mean, he's a chain smoker. He has his own smoke place, I would say, or like his own like seat or something in the São Paulo. So yeah, I mean, certainly it's going to be interesting to see how he's able to really manage that whole different type of culture. And you know, you kind of have to mention, yes, he has never won anything, but he did challenge Juventus. Towards the end, where, you know, in most leagues in the world, you know, that he would definitely win a league title with the points that they earned. But it's going to be tough. I mean, you kind of have to really see it, unless they completely go really successful and you know, win the Europa League or by all intents and purposes, win the Premier League, that he's going to stay in for much, much longer. But yeah, you kind of have to realize that, yeah, this could be a 2-year job or less, depending on how Chelsea are going to do, because they need a lot of wholesale changes and really to keep the key players that they have to in order to move forward.
Very true, very true. I've got to think that the coaching carousel is going to spin a little bit more before all is said and done, at least before the World Cup. But then after the World Cup kicks off, we'll probably be totally focused on player movement, more so than manager movement. As the window ends up being a little short because of the tournament, so we'll see how many more coaches change this week, and we'll bring the whole list to you next week. So, Rob, I know we want to talk about a couple of World Cup rosters this week, specifically Belgium and Germany. I kind of want to start with Belgium, Rob, if that's okay. For me, the Belgian roster is quite interesting because of the news this week about Roger Nainggolan being left off of the 23-man roster for this tournament, which I understand and I don't get all at the same time. It's crazy. But when you look at Roberto Martinez, the head coach there, he kind of specified that he doesn't want Roger Nainggolan because of his habits, is drinking, smoking, all of that nonsense that comes with it. And he's chosen to go with Mauro Fellaini over Roger Nainggolan for the 23-man roster for this team. I mean, for me, I was big on Mauro Fellaini at Everton. Ever since he makes the move to United, he's been awful for me. I don't think he's been very, very good as a player. Roger Nainggolan, on the other hand, has been fantastic at Napoli. I'm sorry, not Napoli, Roma. Even though this year was kind of, for me, an overall down year for him, I think in general, Nainggolan is a better player that brings more to the table than Fellaini. So is it short-sighted on Roberto Martinez to kind of look past, you know, not being able to look past the Roger Nainggolan, the person, and bring on Roger Nainggolan, the footballer?
I mean, you know, it's kind of the same situation regarding, you know, Icardi. I mean, obviously, they're two different situations, but it's that whole attitude kind of thing, and really the whole outside perspective and aspect of a player you know, and it's more, you know, dangle on the person than dangle on the player. You know, I think Roberto Martinez is someone who is really strict on discipline, and which is why that he took him out. But it's a World Cup, and you really need your best players in this situation. But I can understand what Martinez was able to do. But, you know, you're not going to control Nainggolan. You can't change him because of what his attitude is. You could try your best, but you're not going to, because we've seen that time and time again of all the controversies that he's been able to do within the last few years. But it's going to be tough to really replace a player like him. But, you know, at the same time, I mean, this Belgian side is gifted with depth as well on the attack.
Oh, no doubt about it. I mean, just looking at the roster here, we all know what Kevin De Bruyne did this year at Manchester City. Axel Witsel, who left Europe to go play in China, is brought back onto this team. I'm just looking at the numbers, Rob. I'm amazed. Axel Witsel's 29 years old, just turned 29 in January. 85 caps already. You know, really a second. He's actually ahead of Eden Hazard in caps, but Eden Hazard has 2 years on him. But, you know, there's experience on this side. The aforementioned Fellaini has 78 caps. Moussa Dembele's on this team, 73 caps. He'll probably make the team. There's plenty of experience here. Is Martinez the right coach to really take this team deep into this tournament?
It's going to be tough. I mean, they have a really tough group as well. And, of course, heading into the knockout stage, I think anything can happen. But they're going to probably see a Colombia or a Poland or even a Senegal in their knockout stage. And then afterwards, it's going to be a challenge to meet those tough teams like Brazil, Germany, Argentina, Spain, so on and so forth. It's going to take a lot for them to do and really challenge for this World Cup, where many people are putting them as that outsider outside the top five of your Brazil, France, Germany, Spain, and Argentina, that, you know, Belgium needs to do a lot to really challenge for these, for basically the World Cup.
No doubt about it. Now let's look at a team that that I think we both feel can easily win this tournament, and that's Germany. Germany also announced their 23-man roster. For me, the glaring omission is really a switch between, Sandro Wagner and Mario Gomez. They've gone with Mario Gomez over Sandro Wagner on this team. Gomez scoring 9 goals this season for Stuttgart, where Sandro Wagner made the move to Bayern Munich, still managed 12 goals in the season, coming off the bench. I mean, I don't know that either of these guys would get into the tournament or into a match unless they were well ahead. I think the goal scoring and the striker duties are going to be strictly on Thomas Müller and Timo Werner from RB Leipzig. But are you shocked at the omission of Sandro Wagner or the inclusion of Mario Gomez over Wagner?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's certainly an interesting case, but you kind of have to also realize that Gomez has experience, you know, 73 caps, 31 goals. So you're definitely getting definitely a lot of reliance goal scoring in this one. But, you know, you look at Timo Werner, who I feel is going to be the starting striker for this German side, but then you kind of have to worry about strikers for Germany, because you have, if Werner does go down, okay, you can replace him with Gomez, but after that, what? You need to switch Müller to a striker where you could have the amount of midfielders and perhaps one of the best midfielders in the world, maybe the best midfield in the world, in terms of depth. I mean, you have that type of depth and assurance, but when it comes to strikers, you don't really have much as well. I mean, that I think that's the one flaw that I think Germany might have heading into this tournament.
But they can get goals. They can get goals through their midfield pretty easily. Right. You know, we're talking about Mesut Ozil, but I want to talk about more like Toni Kroos, Julian Draxler, Marco Reus, I believe, has made this team. Leroy Sané, we know what he did at City this year. So there's goals to be had through the midfield. I also like the defense. The defense, Rob, is wow. And I don't know who's going to start centrally for them between Jerome Boateng, Mats Hummels, and Antonio Rudiger. All three of them really playing at the top of their game. All three of them below 30 years of age. They have depth upon depth. They're going to get Joshua Kimmich on one side. Probably going to be Nicolas Sule on the other side, I believe. Maybe Ginter, and I'm not sure which one will be chosen there. But Boateng, Hummels, and Rudiger as your three central defenders is just amazing, don't you think?
Yes. So that's definitely an embarrassment of riches in the defense that not a lot of teams in the world have.
You know, our last question on, or last point on Germany, what do they do at goalkeeper? Apparently, Manuel Neuer is going to be healthy enough to be on this team, and it's already come out that if Neuer's on the team, Neuer starts. But they've got Marc-Andre Ter Stegen, and we know what he's done at Barca on, you know, this year. He's been incredible, easily one of the top three goalkeepers on the season, in incredible form. Do you go with Neuer, who hasn't really played much over the last 2 years, nursing this injury, or do you go with Ter Stegen?
I mean, you kind of have to. Well, Joe Hinkle did say, you know, if Neuer is fit, he will definitely start. So I kind of have to give him the benefit of the doubt. But yeah, I mean, I think his reliance will definitely be tested within the next few games against Mexico, and I believe the last games against, or sorry, the second games against Sweden. So I guess those two games are going to be really, really tested. If Neuer, okay, if Germany do win, which I feel that they could. Indeed, do, but if Neuer is conceding a goal or more than that and really becoming shaky, you know, you kind of have to put in Ter Stegen for such a important tournament like him, like the World Cup. But I still feel that Neuer is the number one if he is fit, because of his reliance and really the type of leader that he's been for this team for such a long time.
No doubt about it. So let's next week we'll look at some more of the World Cup rosters. We are 18 days away from the tournament kicking off, which is going to be fantastic. So looking forward to it. So, Rob, I know we have the trivia answer, but we have some matches to watch this week as the friendlies kick off, man. Do you want to run down the matches and then give the trivia question again?
Yeah, absolutely. So the matches to watch for are just a bunch of friendlies. Italy will take on Saudi Arabia at 2:45 p.m. the same time, Portugal against Tunisia, France, Ireland at 3, and then the United States take on Bolivia at 6:30 p.m. On Wednesday, you have Morocco, Ukraine at 6 in the morning. Set your alarm clocks for that one. Japan, Ghana also at 6:25 a.m. On Friday, you have Egypt, Colombia at 12 p.m. Also on that same day, which I think is the match of the week in terms of friendlies, is France, Italy at 3 p.m. Then on Saturday, you have England, Nigeria at 12:15, Sweden, Denmark at 1:45, and then Belgium, Portugal, also probably one of the matches to watch this week. At 2:45 p.m., Belgium, Portugal. So, heading into the trivia answer, the trivia question as followed again. Cristiano Ronaldo is one of 10 players to win 4 Champions League titles with Real Madrid during that time span that they won 4 Champions Leagues in 4 years, in 2014, 2016, 2017, and 2018. Can you name the players that have joined Ronaldo into winning those 4 titles?
Okay, I'm going to go with, I think, some easy ones. Danny Carvajal.
Yes.
How about Luka Modric?
Yes.
Toni Kroos?
No.
I was going to say, I think he wasn't there for the first one. I think he came over after the first one.
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
Isco?
Yes.
Nacho?
Yes.
Crap. I think he might have been there, but he might not have been there for the first one as well. Karim Benzema?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure if he was there or not. Another one I'm not sure was there for the first one, Gareth Bale.
Yes.
He was there for the first
one. Scored in the final as well.
Okay, so I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I need three more, huh?
Three more.
Wow. I know.
And they all started last night. I'll give you that hint.
And they all started last night.
Yes.
Okay, so let's see. Bale, Isco, CR7. Bale, Isco, CR7.
In fact, all of these players saw the pitch last night.
Oh, Marcelo.
Yes. One more. Two more.
Okay. Yeah, because if there were 10 players, then Cruz is the only one that didn't. So Rafa Varane was on the team?
Yes.
Oh, wow. And then Sergio Ramos.
Yes. And actually, I just remember, there's one more. There's one more player.
Okay, so I just named everybody. So let me see. So I know... I think he's too young, but Marco Asensio?
No.
Okay. I was going to say, I think he's way too young. So, Keylor Navas became the only player ever out of CONCACAF to win 3 Champions Leagues, breaking his tie with Rafa Marquez. He started in goal. It was Danny Carvajal, which we already named, Rafa Varane, Sergio Ramos, Marcelo on the back line. It was Kroos, Modric. Kroos, we said, is a no. Modric was a yes. let's see, 4, 5, 7. Oh, Casemiro? But I don't think
yes.
He was on the team for all 4?
He was on the team of all 4.
Wow.
Although Although Casemiro didn't play much in the first season, he was on the squad.
Okay. He was the only player who was missing then. So the list is Benzema, Carvajal, Luka Modric, Isco, Nacho, Bale, Marcelo, Varane, Sergio Ramos, Casemiro, and Cristiano.
That's right.
Four titles. Wow, that's amazing. So, all right, man. Let's see. So that's a trivia answer, and I think that's everything on the docket. By the way, I think the matches at the end of the week are way more compelling than the matches at the beginning of the week. Egypt-Colombia, I think, although I don't think we're going to see Mohamed Salah, of course, that still is a compelling match to see how both teams come out leading into the World Cup. France-Italy, obviously France going to the World Cup, but Italy under Mancini now, bringing in an incredibly young squad. The return of Mario Balotelli, there's a lot of storylines there. Belgium-Portugal, Rob. You know, we just talked about Belgium. I think that one is one of the ones you got to circle on the calendar this week.
Definitely.
England-Nigeria. How does England handle the quick pace that the Nigerians will bring to the pitch? I think is going to be a fantastic one as well. So we've got some real good ones there. So I think we did everything, Rob. Want to hit the closing music?
Sounds good.
Let's do it. Get this fired up and singing away here. All right. So now for episode 205 of Low Limit Football, special thanks again to Stel Stiliano from Shoot the Defense for joining us today. Next week, we will have Gary Thacker on from These Football Times. He's author of the book Cheers, Tears, and Jeers, A History of England and the World Cup. Definitely catch up. We've got the book. We're going to take a look at that. We'll talk about the book. We're going to talk about the English national team and so much more as we prepare for the World Cup final. So, for episode 205 of Low Limit Football, I'm Joe Uccello.
Roberto Rojas.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and good night.